Thank you, Dana, for agreeing to speak tonight.
Well, thank you guys for having me. My name is Dana. I'm a food addict, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Dana.
Hi, Dana.
And always grateful to have the opportunity to do service. It's kind of an important part of my recovery. And even going through the process of kind of preparing for today really reminds me of, why service is so powerful for me, because I've gone through this whole process of looking back at my history and where I've been, what happened, and where I am today, and it's really been a great gift. So I'm grateful to have the opportunity to come here. And I just read the 12 steps, and having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we carried this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And that's really kind of what I was thinking of talking about tonight, is sort of the spiritual awakening for me. And that's what my journey has really been, and that's kind of what I want to talk about. You know, the Bill's story talks about a spiritual experience and the whole white light thing, and that really didn't happen for me. And it was more of a spiritual awakening, and continues to be. And in the there is a solution part of the big book, it talks about spiritual experience, huge emotional displacement rearrangement, emotional rearrangement. So, there's other parts where it talks about a personality change. And for me, looking at it in so many different ways has really helped me see how much I've changed and how much I've grown in this recovery and in this program. So the best place for me to start really is at the beginning. And I came in the rooms in 2002, in the early part of 2002, and it was because I had noticed my eating behaviors. And it wasn't as if they just started then, but I suddenly became conscious that about the impact they had had. And I think they escalated because of some things that were going on in my life around 9/11, etc. But so my eating behaviors were escalating, and I was sneaking food and carrying food around in my pockets so no one would see me eating, and waiting for my partner to go to sleep so that I could eat. And I was, I'm so grateful today that I was willing to like bring it up to talk to a friend about it. And I said, here's what's going on. And for me, it was primarily around sugar. I worked in an environment where, especially the holiday time, I'm really grateful I don't work in that environment anymore this time of year, but I worked in an environment where everybody was bringing food in. And the doctors and everybody was bringing us gifts of food. And, as I walked towards the table, you really shouldn't be doing this. This isn't something you can eat. You really don't want to have one, and you'd eat it. And then as I walked back to my desk, chastising myself, only to turn right back around and go back over to the food. And for me, it was sort of the classic addict that is described in this big book. I couldn't keep from taking the first bite, and then once I'd taken it, I couldn't keep from continuing to eat and crave and just nonstop. So it was the classic description of the alcoholic and compulsive overeater for me that you read about in this book. And so I mentioned it to this friend, and she said, "Well, that's OA." I said, "All right, I don't know what the hell that is," but so she, fortunately had known some people. She wasn't in program, but I ended up doing some research and showed up. I had a meeting in Red Bank on Saturday morning. Red Bank 10 a.m. meeting is my home meeting, and I showed up there, I ended up in tears like halfway through the meeting because I heard my story coming from everybody else's mouth. And at the end of that meeting, the classic thing that, everybody like comes over and they're hugging you and they're talking to you, and it was like such a great experience, even though I'm sobbing. And I got my first lesson in service because somebody in that room said to me, she lived close by to me, she was going to go up to Edison Sunday night in Edison and newcomer meeting. You know, and I have to believe that she probably wasn't going to go, but was doing service to get me to that meeting. And, you know, I'm so grateful for that lesson in service, you know, and going through this process of preparing and seeing how I learned about all the tenets of this program. And this was my first view at service that I have to keep it I have to give it away if I'm going to keep it. And so I went up to that meeting, learned more about program, heard more about what I was supposed to do. And so I continued to come back because that's what you guys told me to do. I had to keep coming back, go to 6 meetings, you know, and then by then I was, you know, addicted to the meetings. But, you know, I continued to go to my meetings Saturday in Red Bank, Thursday in Red Bank, and meetings became very powerful for me. And the whole idea of higher power, you know, I mean, the first meeting I remember hearing about people talking about food. I don't remember anything really about higher power, but as I continued to go to meetings, people were talking about higher power and God, and it was really uncomfortable for me. You know, I didn't believe in God, and I thought people that did were stupid. You know, I thought that it was a ridiculous concept because at that time for me, it was what I had heard or learned was it was this old guy with a white beard and the staff sitting on the cloud, and you know, that's what God was, and I didn't believe in that. I mean, I was raised Jewish, but we never, you know, I wasn't really highly religious in my home, but that's the vision of God. And you know, I was so grateful to learn in the rooms that I could have my own concept of what higher power was. So right away it became the fellowship. Somebody in the rooms told me, well, make the fellowship your higher power. And so all right, so that was the first step in my awakening, the willingness to believe that I could, my first idea about higher power was wrong, that maybe there was a higher power. So I had to believe that you guys were right and that I, that there was something for me to believe in outside of myself, because that's all I believed in, that only I knew what was right and everybody else was wrong. And if people would just, you know, this what they talk about in the Big Book, people would just follow me, things would go much better. So this was my first attempt or my first step in coming to believe in a power greater than myself. So, and then I got a sponsor, because that's what you guys told me to do. So I got a sponsor, and the work I did with the sponsor, this first sponsor, was around my food. It was around really learning what I was eating and how it was affecting me, and trying to identify what my triggers were. And I didn't get abstinent right away. In fact, I don't think I was abstinent for any length of time, you know, until the beginning of the following year. But I learned a lot about food. I learned a lot about my food and what my triggers were. It didn't stop me from picking up, but I was learning about my food, and that's all okay because it was a part of my journey. And so, you know, this sponsor was having me call her every night, having written down my food, talking about what I'd eaten that day. I learned about white knuckling. I learned about you know, what that sugar was in freaking everything. I never knew the things that sugar was in, you know, so I began to learn about food even more because I, you know, I've been on every diet there ever was, but, you know, I learned a lot more about food. But I wasn't getting abstinent. You know, I couldn't put, you know, more than a couple of days or a week together. And, you know, in this process, I bumped into an old friend, just not in the rooms, but I bumped into her and we were talking and we said, okay, you know, we should really get together. And ironically, it actually happened because, you know, when you bump into people like that sometimes, you know, we should get together and you never do. Well, we did, and we went out to dinner with our significant others at the time, and, you know, it was one of those places where everything was included, so they came around and they asked what we wanted for dessert, and her response was, no, thank you, I don't eat sugar. So I was, like, wanting to jump across the table, but we were with other people, so I eventually got plans with her another night, and by the time, I don't even know if we were sitting at the table yet, when I said, what is this all about with not eating sugar? And then I learned all about her being in the rooms for 16 years, and that she became my next sponsor. And she brought me through kind of steps. She brought me through the first five steps, but so it was kind of the beginning of my step work, but really we didn't focus on the fact that I was going through the steps, but when I think about it, that's what we did. She helped me look at my life and my abstinence. You know, that day it was January 24th, 2003, and she said, you know, I had that one day. She says, okay, well, you have one day. She said, if you had a one-day-old baby, would you let it out of your sight? Would you put it down? Would you stop thinking about it? And the answer was, of course, no. So I began to look at my abstinence as that baby, that one-day-old baby. And I took very good care of it, and I paid a lot of attention to it. And it's important for me in this process going through this now to remember that, because I don't do that now. I don't pay enough attention to it now. And so it's a great gift for me to go back to this and remember. Because if it's one day at a time, I've got a one-day-old baby every single day. But right now I sort of have a 13-year-old teenager who wants to sort of act up. So going through this process of doing service and reminding myself of what's important for my recovery, again, as I've said, is really powerful for me. So, you know, we spent some time talking about, you know, ways of thinking differently about my abstinence. And then we talked about the unmanageability, you know. So, you know, my environment was completely unmanageable. I mean, I could go into my room and tell you what I wore each day during the week because of where the clothes all around the room. And so I got homework assignments, you know. Your first homework assignment is to not leave your clothes lying around. So the clothes began to get put away or put in the hamper or, you know, folded back up, you know, in a place where they belonged. They weren't on the floor, on the chair, on the window seat, all around the room. And so over the course of time, I changed my behavior. And now to leave things laying around feels uncomfortable to me. So it helped me change my thinking by changing my behavior around that particular thing. So then once I was like, okay, that's good, I'm not leaving my clothes around, now I had to went to the dishes in the sink and, you know, the food on the counter or the toothpaste or whatever it was, slowly looking at my behaviors and changing my behaviors purposefully helped me change the way I think. And so the unmanageability in my environment shifted. And we began to then talk about the unmanageability inside. And one of my character defects is selfishness and self-seeking behavior, and but at the same time, no self-confidence whatsoever. And so a part of the process that we went through was to talk about, how I looked at myself and how I thought about myself. And a lot of times, you know, in program, people have asked me, how did it happen for you? You know, I mean, 13 years of recovery, you know, it sounds like a lot, and people are like, well, how did you do it? What is that spiritual experience? You know, and I don't know. You know, I just put one foot in front of the other and things happened. It wasn't like one thing was said to me and then it sort of happened. So this spiritual awakening, you know, has happened for me over time. And you know, this one thing about my self-confidence, you know, I at work I had been asked to participate in a very significant strategic planning event, and I was telling her about it, and we knew each other from work years ago, so she kind of knew the environment. And I said, this is ridiculous. There's no way I'm ready to do this. I'm not qualified for this. And she said to me, well, who asked you to do it. And I told her, as one of the vice presidents in the organization, she says, well, what do you think of her? And I'm like, well, she is, you know, she's brilliant. She's a mentor. She's, you know, really smart. I admire her. You know, she says, so do you think that she would ask you to do something like this if you weren't ready? And so it totally shifted my thinking, because I could only see my picture of myself. And she helped me see that everybody else's could be different than mine. You know, and she also, she took out, we were at a diner, so she took out this and she said to me, what do you see? And I said, it's a sweet and low pack. She said, well, what do you see? I'm like, well, it's a pink rectangle. And I began to describe what I was looking at. So I'm looking at a pink rectangle with a little small sign that says sweet and low and all the ingredients. But then she turned it around, and it's different on the other side. And so it was the beginning of me being able to see that what I see is not necessarily what everybody else says, yet it's still the same sweet and low path. So I needed that sort of practical, visual, practical exercises, tangible things to help me begin to evolve. You know, when I was a kid, you know, where was I, you know, growing up? When I was a kid, no self-confidence. I remember being in 10th grade, standing up at the front of the room because I was supposed to give a book report, start to speak, break down completely crying, run out of the room in high school, you know, talk about never wanting to show my face again, you know, back in school, to now, where I teach classes and I run 3-, 4-, 5-day events where I'm standing at the front of the room speaking, and I'm perfectly comfortable about it. And it's because of this program that I've been able to feel confident and trust that I'm qualified to stand at the front of the room. You know, another little thing that helped me in that was, you know, this sponsor also, she gave me a Maya Angelou book, and there was all these quotes in it, and I don't remember the specific one, but it pretty much said, who am I not to say what comes into my mind? Who am I not to share the messages or the language that God gave me to share? I'm here for a reason. This program taught me that I'm here for a reason. And so, who am I not to share what comes into my mind? So it's really helped me to shift the way I think. So, you know, these were some of the exercises that she brought me through. We did the fourth step and the fifth step also, and then shortly after that sort of parted from the sponsorship relationship. And I ended up actually, through that sort of evolution, going through a really tumultuous breakup and relocation and moving actually to this area, and ended up coming to this meeting and getting a new sponsor. And in working with that sponsor, I did, you know, my 6, 7, 8, and 9, and the exercise of going through 6 and 7 of actually looking at those character defects that I had identified and saying, you know, how had they served me? What benefit had those defects given to me? How had they formed? You know, these are all like learned behaviors. And then how had they outlived their usefulness? And then what could replace them? What was the opposite behavior or emotion? And that exercise helped me get ready to say in the seventh step, please, you know, remove all these defects of character, because I had something to replace them with. I'm, you know, one of the greatest mantras for me in this program is progress, not perfection. I'm not perfect. And I, you know, I still struggle at times with my food, and I definitely struggle with my character defects. And my first reaction is always the original habitual reaction. I always want to tell you the right way to do it. It's immediately my reaction. I still get call food thoughts, and the food still calls me. I have not, that has not been lifted from me as it has from some people. And, you know, but my life, I can still live in recovery because now I know there's another way. I know that just because that's the first thing that comes doesn't mean I have to believe it, doesn't mean I have to do it. Just because I get that, you know, suddenly I thought it would be a good idea to have a shot of whiskey in my milk, as Jim's story says, just because suddenly I think I should drive through this place to get food, suddenly I think I should fill in the blank, doesn't mean I have that that's the right decision for me. Just because I think it doesn't make it right. And that was never the way I believed before I got into these rooms. The fact that there's another way, there's another choice that I can make, there's another place for me to go and to connect to my higher power and to recognize or identify the next right thing. Again, that was a part of my first lessons in these rooms, the next right thing. You know, good orderly direction, that was God for me for a period of time. You know, I had to find and pay attention to my guiding force, which is how I describe my higher power today, and, you know, learn a new way. And through acting differently, the chapters into action, I was able to learn how to think differently. So, what I'm right now, one of the other things I did with another sponsor is to go through the literature, because all the tools have been really powerful for me, and you know, I have the AA 12 and 12. After going through all the steps, and I had a new sponsor, and she's, you know, I'd already gone through the steps, so she said, all right, well, let's go through the 12 and 12 and identify all the promises. So that was another amazing gift, to go through the literature and see all the promises that are made to us in this literature. And, you know, it's always helpful for me to go through and to suddenly see a P with a circle around it and then know that that's a promise that this book makes to me and then the program makes to me if I'm willing to continue on this path of recovery. You know, I talked a little bit about higher power and coming to believe, and you know, one of the things that, you know, we do in the 12-step study is, you know, you get to the third step prayer, and it says, God, I offer myself to thee to do with me and build with me as thou wilt. And I didn't like that language at all. I found that language to be very uncomfortable. And so this sponsor let me write my own third step prayer. And then we wrote a seventh step prayer. So I have those, and I carry them with me because I can, you know, and it gives me another way to connect to my higher power in a moment, you know, whenever I need to. The tenth step says I continue to take personal inventory and promptly admit it. And you know, the work I'm doing now is in going through this big book with like audio podcasts. And one of the things I recently heard about the tenth, you know, it was kind of a reminder. It says, you know, promptly admitted it. It's kind of hard to promptly admit it if I only do the 10th step at night. So what I'm trying to do now through, you know, my using my prayers and things like that is because I know when I've done something wrong, when my behavior is out of alignment. So I have to pull myself off to the side and go through the, you know, identifying my character defect, what came up for me, and admit it to myself, to God, and to, if I can, get on the phone with my sponsor, to another human being, and talk about the behavior that, and get guidance on how to make amends if it's necessary. I can do it the next day if I do my 10th step at night, but my work now has to be in walking a closer walk with my higher power so that I know and can make amends more promptly. That's, you know, that's the continued journey for me, is because I don't maintain that spiritual connection in a way that I can always do that. And again, that comes, my perfectionist comes up, and I need to be able to give myself that, you know, the space to make progress. And that's what I'm trying to do each day through, you know, through continuing this step work. So I don't know how much time I have left, but
definitely 5 minutes.
Okay. So,
10.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I even have that much left, but so
open to you.
Yeah. The through going through the step work and using the tools, what I've, you know, I'm not connected to, you know, the service groups, the Region 8 or anything like that, but when the action plan came out as another tool, I was really excited about it because I use all the tools, or many of the tools anyway, and the action plan has been a really powerful tool for me because how I use it is that I outline, you know, daily what I'm going to do each day related to my recovery. So for me, I have to get up and exercise each day. That is sort of the beginning of the way my day has to start, because that's really important for me to take care of my physical health. And when I do that, I eat right. I eat a better breakfast, then I take my vitamins, which is also a part of important for me. I read my literature, and I commit my food. And so all those things happen in the morning, and then I do I read Upon Awakening, which is a new piece of literature that I didn't used to read. But all this is like the action plan, and I've committed my action plan. God loves smartphones, because now I have my action plan in my smartphone and I can go through that each day. But the action plan is a really powerful tool for me, and it just lines up all the other tools and how I'm going to use them each day. So, you know, I think for me what's been, you know, in thinking about my recovery to talk today, you know, I had all these behaviors and the way I lived. It wasn't just about my food. It was the way I lived. And through learning new behaviors, I've had the spiritual experience, the spiritual awakening, the personality change, however, whatever language we give it, through the work on the steps and using all the tools of this program. And so I'm grateful for the you know, the opportunity to come here and share today and to have gone back through all this and to be able to think about where I've been. And you know, there's still more work and growth for me to do, and I'm excited to still have the willingness to show up and do it. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you for sharing.